Now back to the old and the new. The new is that the new Mississippi River Bridge that opens this weekend. The old is what archaeologists found during construction. It has shed new light on the ancient society of Native Americans who populated the Metro East 1,000 years ago. We've long known about the civilization that populated Cahokia. Now we know more because of archaeological findings at the east end of the new bridge. With us to talk about the discoveries is Brad Kolderhoff, chief archaeologist for the Illinois Department of Transportation. Joseph Galloy is the Illinois State Archaeological Survey's research coordinator for the Metro East region. He's based in Wood River. Both of us join us by phone. Gentlemen, nice to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Nice to be here.
Good to be with you.
Good. Let's get right on this because time is somewhat limited. What do we now know about that civilization on the east side of that bridge that we didn't know before construction began?
I'll take that question.
Who is this?
This is Brad Kolderhoff, archaeologist with IDOT.
Sure. Just wanted to confirm your voice.
Yeah, sure. So the biggest thing is that we know that it was there because we knew from early accounts and some maps from the 1800s when East St. Louis really grew and expanded and built up over the top of the old ground surface, that there were mounds there that were probably related to Cahokia Mounds. But now we know for sure that it's there and it's largely preserved underneath the present-day surface of East St. Louis. So that's the most important, that it's there and it's likely preserved across East St. Louis. The other is that we have detailed information about the everyday life of a prehistoric city. We've probably dug as much of the East St. Louis Mound Group, which is directly related to Cahokia Mounds, as has been dug at Cahokia Mounds. So this is just a treasure trove of new information about how people lived in the Mississippi River Valley nearly 1,000 years ago.
Joe Galloy, what do you know about how they lived? How did they live?
Well, I guess first, just to give you a general orientation of a sense of the site, the site is buried under the modern ground surface, and we estimate it covers about 480 acres. So we're talking about a pretty sizable occupation. This is actually an urban area. So these people would have been living in something that would be recognizable as a city, an ancient city. And the work that we had done was able to uncover about 35 acres total of that 480-acre site. So we have a sample of about 7.5%, 7.5% of that site. And within our sample, we see some different areas where people clearly are just, going about their daily lives in residential neighborhoods. We have other areas that are actually closer to what we would call the ceremonial core of the city, which seem to be specialized. We have things like large public buildings where likely things like politics were discussed. We have things that may be considered to be temples or buildings that would have been specialized religious structures. But really, there's quite a bit of internal variety in terms of the settlement, just like you would expect for any ancient or modern city.
Some of the things that I've read have indicated that this may have been, because of its separation from the other part of the society, might have been a spiritual center of some sort.
That's one thing that's been thrown out there. Right now, we're in the second year of analysis. We finished up our excavation work in late 2012, and since then, our archaeologists that are based in the Metro East and whatever, as you said, are working on the artifact analysis. So we're analyzing the material remains that we recovered from the corridor, as well as all the documents of, the buildings and storage pits and things like that we dug up. And so from that analysis, we're trying to piece together really kind of what the nature of the site was. There probably were some areas, as you say, that may have been more related to spiritual things, whereas other areas were probably much more mundane.
Brad, what specifically are some of the artifacts that you found, the kinds of things you found?
It would be typical for Cahokia society, which they were a Stone Age society, meaning that they really didn't have any metal tools. They did trade for some pieces of native copper that they heated and hammered out to make ornaments, but everyday life was completed with stone tools fitted to wooden handles. And that really makes the accomplishments that they did, that of landscaping the Cahokia Mounds to make this large central plaza, and on the north end of that is Monk's Mound, largest earthen mound in North America. And there's nearly 100, there's more than 100 other mounds at Cahokia. There were at least 30-some in East St. Louis, so that's a lot of work, human labor, with stone tools and stone axe heads fitted into handles, chip stone hoe blades that were fitted onto wooden handles, and they moved a lot of earth. They also cut down lots of trees. There's many axe heads and broken axe heads and remnants of the large marker or ceremonial posts, the impressions in the ground and the holes that they dug, the post molds or post holes for inserting and extracting these large poles. And then the charcoal, the only organic matter that we find with any regularity, since it's nearly 1,000 years old, is the charcoal. So if organic material didn't burn all the way to ash, it's preserved as charcoal, and that will stay there forever. It's rather delicate, but we can date the C14 content of that and come up with a calibrated calendar date for that. But also, it retains the structure of what it was. So we've found charred pieces of split cane matting that may have been used to cover the houses that were made out of poles and thatch. They're maybe had bundles of prairie grass that covered, or cattail mats, as well as these split cane mats that they would have put on the floors as well as covered the houses. And just you can look at the pieces of wood and the ring patterns in the wood. You can tell whether it's oak or hickory or maple. So there's lots of detailed information about how they threw these scraps of charcoal and the charred seeds and nuts. So we can reconstruct what they were harvesting and what they were growing, lots of fragments of charred maize or corn, maize cobs and kernels, then fish bones when the soil in the areas where the soil isn't too acidic, where the bone has been preserved. We get a great picture of what species of fish they were extracting from the river, waterfowl that they were hunting, and so forth.
Right. Joe Galloy, how advanced was this society at this particular time?
I guess it depends on what you mean by advanced. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, that's kind of a question that, in a way, is a value judgment that, as anthropologists, we try not to make in terms of sort of ranking assessing societies based on their complexity. We do know, we can very much infer that they had a very complex social organization, complex politically, socially. It was probably organized largely along kinship lines, like many traditional societies, where things like religion and politics and obligations to do things like build the mounds or build plazas, all these things are all wrapped up together in the fabric of their society. As Brad mentioned earlier, in terms of technological advancement, they really were limited to the stone tools, which was fairly typical for most of the New World.
And the point I wanted to make, and I don't think made very clearly, is that...
Can I ask you just to hold up on that thought? Sure, I have to take a break. I'm running a little late on that. And we can pick up on that point when we come back, as we continue our conversation on the society, the civilization that existed 1,000 years ago on the east side of the new Mississippi River Bridge. My guests are Brad Koldehoff and Joseph Galloy, archaeologists. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We continue our conversation on the archaeological findings on the east side of the new Mississippi River Bridge with Brad Koldehoff and Joe Galloy. Brad, sorry to have interrupted you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the point I was going to make, and I guess to phrase it this way, despite having fairly simple technology like stone tools, they accomplished amazing things. They moved lots of earth, cut lots of timber, constructed huge wooden buildings, had expansive trade networks plying the rivers with dugout canoes. So it's really the remains that we can see of people living in a city, building earthen monuments and erecting large wooden buildings that with simple tools means that they really had to have a complex and well-coordinated social organization to have this much manpower, person power, be used to move so much earth and cut and carve and move wood. They did not have horses. Horses came with the Spanish, and that was, you know, hundreds of years later. The only domesticated animal that we know for sure they had was the dog. So this was largely a human-powered society, and they accomplished great things, which really I think is astounding. And this is probably, as best we can tell, the first city in North America, north of Mexico.
And to that, I guess I would add, this is Joe, just as an example of an idea of scale, the area that the Mississippians would have used to perform certain games in, there's a game called Chunky, for example, there are areas that they would level called plazas, and we estimate that the plaza that was built in East St. Louis was about the same size as 8.5 football fields. So if you can imagine the amount of labor involved in constructing something of that size, you get a kind of a sense of you know, really how sophisticated these people were. The plazas at Cahokia, of course, were much larger than that even.
The reason I asked about how advanced they were, I assume that we know something about other groups of 1,000 years ago in this hemisphere, and just wondering if the Mississippians, as we would call them, were on a par with what we know about these other civilizations.
If you compare the Mississippians to some of the cultures in Central America or in Mexico, I actually used to do some work down in that area. There are important differences that we see in terms of how the buildings were constructed, and I think that's one of the reasons why people have sort of not really recognized the sophistication of these North American or north of Mexican civilizations, is that instead of leaving behind huge stone monuments, stone buildings, they left behind ones that were made out of earth and out of wood. And I think for a long time that really has sort of downgraded in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of some archaeologists the level of sophistication of the society. And I think that concept now is really unraveling, especially as we add to our database of what we know about Cahokia with all this work that we've recently done at East St. Louis.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me on previous programs, perhaps with you, Joe, it was indicated that the impact of this society here could be traced and detected as far north as Wisconsin and as far south as Mexico. Am I wrong on that?
We had seen some evidence of contacts that went into northwest Iowa. Since then, we've recovered additional materials that do indicate at least some contact with people in Wisconsin, and then perhaps all the way down to Florida, at least along the southeastern coast for sure. One thing that we had recovered since the last time I was on the program a couple of years ago were three caches. They're basically bags full of marine shell, and those all came from likely the Gulf Coast as opposed to the Atlantic Coast. And other materials that we found at East St. Louis indicate contact over much of the sort of southeastern and midwestern United States. So we see direct evidence in terms of artifacts of Cahokia's influence at across much of the continent.
Have you found anything in the most recent dig, the one that we've been talking about, to give any kind of a hint as to what happened to this group? Because as my understanding, once again, is that it simply disappeared.
Well, that's one of the big questions. Really, there's two big questions. How or why did this develop? And what happened to it? Where did they go? Why did it disappear? And there's several theories on what happened to these folks. It's not like this the civilization completely died out, it's most likely that people, just like so many people, immigrated to Cahokia and East St. Louis to help form this first large city. They left, and they spread out across the southeast and the west. And so there's little glimmers of information, little ethnographic stories and pottery traits and other little things that indicate that many groups may be descended from Cahokia. Some current tribes claim direct association, but there's no direct links that we've found for any existing tribes. But certainly, if you were to think of New York City, many people coming from many places living there, and then something happens and they leave and they spread out across the country, you would have many different ancestries. And the question is, why did these people leave? There's the environmental ideas of drought or flood or environmental degradation. I do think that the environmental impact had to have something to do with it. I mean, a city is a city, even if you don't have the technology and the accumulation of waste and hazardous materials we have.
Maybe they got a little too much of the kind of weather that we've had for the last couple of weeks. I've only got a minute left, and I do want to get one other question in, and Joe, I'll throw it your way. You okay. said that this find represents about 7%, I think you said, of what's over there. Are we ever going right. to find the other 93%, or is that long gone and inaccessible?
That's really a good question, because we really don't know. The site is buried by a blanket of urban fill, and it's completely overprinted by modern East St. Louis and nearby areas like Fairmount City. So when we were doing our work, sometimes, you know, factory buildings were being demolished in front of our eyes. We would peel up the foundations and the concrete pads and find intact archaeological remains underneath it. Other areas, the basements of the factories were too deep, and they had destroyed it. This site is still actually very poorly understood. We know very little about the eastern boundaries of the site. And so our estimate of 480 acres is really just kind of like a guesstimate. There's a lot of this that we just don't know where it is.
Well, as you learn more, we'll have to have you back and have you tell us about it. It's fascinating
sure.
stuff. It's a great story and a great mystery at the same time. I want to thank you, Brad Kolderhoff, Chief Archaeologist for the Illinois Department of Transportation. Thanks for being with us. Joe Galloy, the Illinois State Archaeological Survey's Research Coordinator for the Metro East. Thank you so much for being with us. Enjoyed it.
Thanks for having us.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with representatives of the Missouri History Museum about their upcoming exhibit 250 in 250, which commemorates the city's upcoming semi-quincentennial. And we'll talk with the Nine Network's Jim Kircher about an upcoming documentary that is called Shoto's Journal, in his own words, a look at the man who founded St. Louis. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.